The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. I teach Christian apologetics to 11th grade students at Christian High School in El Cajon, and I also have my own Christian apologetics ministry. My website is educateforlife.org, where you can take classes on apologetics online. Apologetics is the Greek word for defend, and that's what I do. I help people get answers to their questions about God and Christianity and the social issues that we have to deal with in our country regarding those things. You can join in our discussion tonight by calling 888-344-1170. Tonight, we're going to be talking about what I consider to be the most significant issue currently facing our country. It's more important, in my opinion, than abortion, the definition of marriage, the economy, the Second Amendment. It's more important than anything, and that is school choice and its impact on our education system. We're going to be having several guests on the show tonight, and our first guest is Lindsay Burke. She is the Will Skillman Fellow in Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. She focuses on issues from kindergarten to 12th grade, specifically how to limit federal intervention into education. And at the state level, she focuses on how to expand school choice. Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Great. Yeah, I'm really excited to have you on. I think this is such a critical issue. And I realize that the people out there are getting more and more educated about school choice, but there's still a lot of people out there who really don't know what exactly school choice is. Would you mind kind of in a nutshell explaining what is school choice for our audience?
Yeah, you know, I think it's very essence. School choice is this idea of funding children instead of funding institutions, and allowing funding for public education to follow a child to any school of their choice, whether it's public, private, charter, homeschooling, online learning, really following a child to an educational option that best fits their unique learning needs. So I think at its heart, it really is about funding children instead of funding physical school buildings.
I see. Okay. And now, in contrast to school choice, prior to this movement gaining ground and gaining traction, what is the opposite of school choice? Non-school choice? What is that?
Well, I would say it's our prevalent system today, which is government-assigned schools, where your child is assigned, depending on your zip code, to where they will attend school, regardless of whether that school meets their unique learning needs. Regardless oftentimes of whether that school is a high-performing school or whether it's a low-performing school. For too many American families, this prevalent assignment by zip code policy really defines their educational experience.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I actually I knew a parent one time who was trying to get their kid into a school that was outside of their zip code and was actually trying to have their son move in with a friend to try to qualify to go to a different school. Crazy situation. But very, very interesting. Why is this such an important issue to you? Do you really think that the school choice movement and school choice is that big of a deal? I emphasize that for me, I think it's one of the most important issues. But what about you? You're an expert in this area. Why is this such an important issue to you?
You know, I think we are finally recognizing the fact that for nearly half a century, our education system has been stagnant. Graduation rates have been stagnant. Math and reading achievement has been virtually flat over the past 4 or 5 decades. We still have these achievement gaps between white and minority children, between low-income children and their more affluent peers, and we're still not competitive internationally. And I think so much of the problem is this monopoly public education system that we have in place. And I think people are finally starting to recognize that to a large extent. We're really seeing this sort of seismic shift across the country toward more school choice options. I think people understand that parents need choices first and foremost, and that we are never going to see improvement to a larger extent in our education system unless we start to put some competitive pressure on the public education system. So I think that's really where we are now. We're starting to see more and more states implementing various types of school choice options. And I think as more parents start to experience school choice and the benefits that accrue as a result of having those choices, that they're actually demanding more choices at the same time.
I see. Okay. And now just to clarify, so the way it works currently with public schools is we all pay into kind of like a general fund, and then the state, the government, then dishes that money out as they seem, deem appropriate to the schools. And then the kid goes to the school and doesn't pay any money. Versus what you're talking about now with school choice is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but is the government gives some sort of a voucher to the parents who then take that money and go to a school and then pay the school directly with that voucher. And they just decide what school they want to go to rather than the school they're told to by the government.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. And that's the way, for instance, Washington, D.C. has a great voucher program. Milwaukee has a great voucher program. That's how they've designed it. In other states, you'll see, for instance, tuition tax credit programs where corporations, Florida is a good example of this, corporations will get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for every dollar that they donate to a scholarship-granting organization. So the corporations can basically say, you know what, instead of paying what I owe my corporate tax, I can actually divert that to a nonprofit that then provides scholarships to low-income children to attend a private school of choice. So that's another way to do it. In Arizona, I think Arizona has the most innovative approach to school choice of any state in the country. What Arizona has done is they have said to parents, if you are unhappy with your child's public school, you can remove the child from the public school and have 90% of what the state would have spent on the child in the school deposited into an education savings account. And what's unique is that you can then use that ed savings account to pay for a variety of educational options. So you could pay for a little private school tuition in the morning, a little online learning in the afternoon, private tutoring, special education services. So you can really divvy up your money. You can roll unused funds over year to year. You can even roll it into a 529 college savings account.
Wow.
Arizona has implemented the most innovative approach to school choice, and it's really allowing parents to totally customize their child's educational experience.
That's amazing. That is really amazing. 90% of every dollar they get to go and put into some sort of a education account. My goodness.
Yeah. It's just so innovative, and I think as we see more and more states start to consider school choice, they should really look to Arizona as a great model for how to implement an innovative option.
Now, I'm sure some people in their minds are thinking to themselves, well, you're going to allow the parents to take that money and then go do whatever they want. The parents aren't informed enough to be able to make that decision. Are there measurable benefits to these sorts of things? Are we seeing Arizona doing better than, say, a state that doesn't have school choice?
Well, first, I would say I trust the instincts of parents over the government always, particularly when it comes to something as important as the education of a child. So I don't put much merit into those fears. And there are, in places like Arizona and other places with school choice programs, there are those fiscal accountability checks. So in Arizona, for instance, you have to show the Arizona Department of Revenue every quarter how you're allocating those ESA dollars so that they know you're not using them to buy something that's not education related.
Yeah.
So there is that fiscal accountability check. But we are seeing just incredible outcomes as a result of school choice. Washington, D.C. is a good example. Students in the D.C. voucher program have a 91% graduation rate versus their non-voucher peers that have about a 70% graduation rate.
And that's fantastic.
It's fantastic, and it's scientifically rigorous evaluations conducted by the U.S. Department of Education that reported those findings. So we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was actually the voucher offer that caused those dramatic increases in graduation rates.
Wow, that is fantastic. Well, you know, it's interesting. Me being a citizen of California here, I'm curious to know, you know, what's happening here in California. I don't know how much you're up to date on that. But, you know, if school choice is so great, what is holding things back? I have three little kids that are all, my son is starting kindergarten here. And I'm curious to know, what are my options going to be in the future? And what is preventing California from embracing school choice even more? Yeah. You know, it's got charters, but it doesn't have, you know, all these options that Arizona has.
Yeah, you're right. You've got charters, you have some public school choice, but beyond that, not a lot of private school choice options. And, you know, unfortunately, it does tend to come down too often to the unions, to special interest groups, the teachers' unions.
Yeah.
They have blocked school choice options time and time again, pour millions of dollars into efforts to try to block any sort of ed reform, not just school choice, but teacher tenure, merit pay, all of these reforms that we know work. The unions are consistently opposed to these reforms. So, but I do think when I say we're at the point where we're seeing a real seismic shift in terms of school choice, that we are on the precipice of seeing just a real sort of stronghold state to state with school choice being implemented. For most people who either live in a state, there's 17 states now that offer private school choice options. You either live in a state that has a private school choice option, or you can look around to your neighboring states and likely see some really good options in place. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll I'm hopeful and optimistic that we won't be stuck in this assignment by zip code monopoly much longer.
Yeah. So on a practical basis here, we've got people out in the audience who I know care about this, are passionate about this. What advice would you give to someone in California who wants to see school choice move forward, but doesn't know where to start or how to get, you know, from where we are today, further along the road here? What practical steps can we take to move that forward?
You know, there are some really great organizations that have come into being in the past few years that I think just provide a wonderful place to start. I would start with a group called National School Choice Week. And National School Choice Week actually just wrapped up last week. There were about 3,500 events across the country promoting school choice, talking about the benefits of choice, and demanding more school choice options. So that's a really great place to start to get resources and to sort of bring together those grassroots efforts to push for more school choice.
Mm-hmm. And just making people aware of the options that are out there, right?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay, I really want to thank you so much for joining us tonight briefly here and just educating us. And just thank you very much for being here.
Great. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Have a great night, Lindsay. I'm Kevin Conover, guest hosting for Bob Siegel on The Bob Siegel Show. After the break, we'll be talking about the future of education in America, including online schools, with two experts, Dr. Everett Piper and Dr. Jim Jeremiah. Stay tuned. It'll be very interesting.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound even more beautiful.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover, filling in for Bob. My website is educateforlife.org. If you want to join us tonight, you can call 888-344-1170. Love to have your questions or your concerns for our guests to answer the questions and to talk about. Dr. Everett Piper is another one of our guests tonight. He's the fifth president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. He has a PhD in higher education from Michigan State University. He's the author of a couple books, The Wrong Side of the Door, Why Ideas Matter, and also Why I Am a, quote, Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. Welcome to the show, Dr. Piper. Dr. Piper, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thank you very much for being here. Our other guest is Dr. Jim Jeremiah. He is a professor of the College of Business and Professional Studies at Ashford University. He works with the Academic Affairs team to develop and facilitate online courses and programs for online curriculum. He has a doctorate in education, an MBA, a master's in theology and communication. He has over 30 years of education experience as an instructor. And so it's a real privilege to have Dr. Jeremiah, you here. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Great, great. Well, I want to get right into it because I'm trying to cram a lot into this show here. But considering your guys' expertise on education, I wanted to just take a kind of a look backwards and see where we've gone where we've come from in education and then where we're going to. And both of you have looked at this issue for quite a while. And I'm just curious, how would you summarize some of the key turning points in education in American history, where we've come from and where we are today, and then you know, kind of where we're going? Why don't we start with Dr. Piper? Would you like to start us off here?
Sure. Well, for the listeners, I think a very, very brief overview of higher education in America. We started out in the colonial period with an emphasis in training up young men to think morally and to behave morally as leaders of our culture, and that was called the British model. We shifted in the late 1800s to what is called the Germanic model, which was more of a science-based and research-based educational model. So we kind of stopped emphasizing moral education, and we started emphasizing technical education. And then in the same time frame, in the early 1900s to the mid-1900s, we shifted from modernity to post-modernity. And with the postmodern frame of reference came radical relativism, so that the only thing that you could learn in the higher educational community was those things that could be empirically validated. If you couldn't taste it, touch it, see it, smell it, and hear it, then it just wasn't so. And that postmodern frame of reference and those assumptions where you deconstruct everything and then reconstruct it on the basis of opinion when it comes to moral values prevails to this day.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, moral relativism, you know, morals are just opinions. You know, one person thinks one thing's wrong, another person thinks it's okay. Now, does that translate into, I mean, how does that impact education? What happens when that begins to be kind of the dominant philosophy rather than morals are an absolute, you know, something lying, for example, is always wrong versus, you know, lying is not always wrong or whatever. How does that impact education?
Well, it has a huge impact on education because, well, let's take, for example, how many times have you heard your students or somebody in leadership say, well, that's your opinion or whatever, or it doesn't really matter. Whatever works for you is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Those assumptions are really self-refuting because it's like saying, well, I can't tolerate your intolerance, or I hate those hateful people, or I'm sure that nothing is sure, and I'm absolutely confident there are no absolutes. They're self-refuting. It's like watching a dog chase its tail. And the irony is, the original colonial model for higher education was classical liberal arts education. Liberal arts education, to educate a free man, a free society. And the only way we could be free was to know the truth, because as Christ told us, the truth sets you free, not opinions. Opinions always lead to bondage and slavery. Pol Pot had an opinion, and Mao had an opinion. Robespierre and Hitler had opinions. Opinions always enslave. I don't give degrees in opinions, and I don't slap you on the back when you graduate and say, congratulations, you've got an opinion.
Yeah.
That's ludicrous.
Very good, huh? That's very interesting. You know, Dr. Jeremiah, it seems like education in America today is kind of facing a crisis. I was looking at some statistics. We are ranked, well, California specifically is ranked 34 out of the 50 states below the average. And America in the world, I know we are considered pretty low compared to other countries like China and Singapore and Finland. What are your thoughts on that as far as what's happening in American education today? What do you see happening?
Well, I don't think it's disconnected with what Dr. Piper was just talking about. I think what we're seeing is the result of relativism being taught in school to the point where knowledge is no longer communicated, knowledge is no longer encouraged. We're having people, particularly in higher ed, who just are looking for a degree, not an education. And as a result of that, they're really embracing vapor. for lack of a better word.
Hmm.
They have little or no content to walk away from. We don't want to tell students, and this goes back, I think, to some of the things you were talking about earlier in the K-12 environment. We don't want to tell a student that's the wrong answer, because once you embrace relativism, in their minds, there really are no wrong answers. There's just a different opinion. So I think what we're seeing is the result of a lack of absolutes, a lack of understanding of knowledge, and as a result of that, as Dr. Piper, I think, said, nobody is really getting a diploma in opinion, but unfortunately, that's exactly what they're getting.
Hmm. Now, this is interesting. You know, somewhere around 75 to 85% of Americans claim to be Christian, you know, and I know that's not always the case when somebody claims that, but considering that, how is it possible that this is happening in education when Christianity is a religion of absolutes? You know, what do you think about that, Dr. Piper?
Well, unfortunately, I think our Christian orthodoxy is falling prey to postmodernity, the emergent church movement, and the mush of our culture. I'm fond of saying, you know, if you want to buy vanilla ice cream, you can buy it on every corner. But if you want to buy a flavor, a distinct and bold flavor, it's difficult to find it today. But if you really want that, you'll buy it from the purveyor that has had the courage and the temerity to give it to you. And I would say the same is true for the church and for the Christian school. So many Christian schools have watered down their curriculum to try to fit in with the rest of culture, and they have done a disservice to the students, who I would argue are like dry sponges waiting to soak up water, because all of the culture that they've grown up with all of the elementary school and secondary education that they've had has been postmodernity to the max. They haven't had any answers. And when they get to the Christian college, they're begging for somebody to give them answers and to guide them toward those things that are stable, immutable, enduring, just and right and true. And the Christian community has the obligation to do that. But unfortunately, so many Christian colleges are falling short.
Mm. So even the people teaching in the Christian colleges and so forth have been raised in this culture of relativism to the point where they're having trouble imparting something that they themselves have never been filled up with.
Well, you've seen the Gallup polls and the Barna polls where it shows, you can pull your numbers from anywhere from 60 to 70% of evangelical born-again Christians cannot tell you that the Bible is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, when you have that type of ambiguity within the body of Christ, you're going to have confusion from Christian educators as they try to pass on orthodoxy, right thinking and right ideas, as well as orthopraxy, right behavior and right practice, to the next generation of Christian leaders.
Oh, that makes sense. Well, Dr. Jeremiah, you've kind of had a hand in a lot of online education with Ashford University and stuff. How is that changing things?
Well, I think from a very practical and a cost-effective standpoint, it's certainly making education more available and more accessible. One of the challenges that I think higher education across the board is having is a financial issue.
Mm.
Schools are struggling to maintain programs and to meet their costs. They've been in public education, particularly supported by tax dollars, to the point where they've been dependent on it. And so now what you're finding is that the financial pressures are really becoming much more prevalent, and they're having to figure out what to do. Online education, because of its relatively low cost structure, makes it possible for schools to offer online education to students anywhere.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm with Dr. Piper and Dr. Jeremiah, both experts on education and the future of education. We've kind of touched on what's happened in the past here and where we are at. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about where we go to next. Stay tuned. I'm with Dr. Piper and Dr. Jeremiah on The Bob Siegel Show. This is Kevin Conover.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover, filling in for Bob. My website is educateforlife.org. I teach online Christian apologetics courses. If you'd like to join us tonight for a conversation on school choice and education and the future of education, you can call 888-344-1170. Dr. Everett Piper is the fifth president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, and Dr. Jim Jeremiah is professor of the College of Business and Professional Studies at Ashford University. And we were just talking about how online education is changing things. It's kind of making things a lot less expensive. A lot of universities are going online, and just it's exploding. Dr. Jeremiah, what does this mean for Christian education today? Is this a good thing that we are more and more classes are going online, or is this a bad thing?
Well, I think it certainly takes the potential for solid education in a much broader path for people who, for whatever reason, have pursued their education late in life. For instance, the average age of our adult learners for most of the online, particularly the for-profit online institutions, is about 33 to 34 years old. Most of those individuals are working, their families. They have an opportunity to get an education that they probably would not get otherwise. And I think from a Christian college standpoint, I think it's a tremendous opportunity to reach out into places that they could never go and provide education, knowledge, opportunity to study the Word of God, to actually build an understanding of what the Bible actually teaches. I think what's happened is many schools have been reluctant to jump into that, but I think we're seeing a trend, even in the more traditional, universities that are starting to use more and more online, but it's taken a while. It's the first online university, really, with University of Phoenix, probably back in 1989, somewhere in that range, really set a trend for online education that is now being embraced by high schools as well as colleges and universities. So for a Christian, this is a great opportunity, and I don't think we lack for the opportunity. It's just a matter of being willing to grab onto it and do something with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for even me myself, I'm getting my master's degree right now, and if it weren't for the fact that I can get it online, right now I'm attending Biola. I'm getting a master's degree in apologetics, and I'm able to do it all online. That flexibility is just a lifesaver for me. Public schools, as far as I understand it, were originally started to teach kids to read the Bible. The very first schools in our country was so that kids would be able to read the Bible. How do you feel, Dr. Piper, about the future of education as an outlet for sharing the gospel? I was recently asked to I did a career day over at Point Loma High School. That's my where I graduated from, and a teacher invited me to come share what I do, and I said, I'm a Bible teacher. Is that okay? And she said, yeah, that's fine, but just don't talk about God. And there's this huge wall, quote unquote, separation of church and state. And do you feel positive that right now the public schools have embraced under the name of neutrality, really this kind of agnostic moral relativism, as you were saying. Do you think that in the future that the Christian worldview is going to get a fair hearing? What do you see happening?
Well, first, you're right. Historically, the educational system in the United States was founded
explicitly within the context of a Judeo-Christian ethic and a biblical worldview. Yale, for example, its original charter called for the educational community, the faculty of Yale, to lay Christ at the bottom, quote-unquote, as the foundation for all learning.
Mm.
Harvard was the same. Dartmouth was the same. Princeton, and the list goes on. The University of Michigan has on the header of its library to this day, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free," a quote of Christ. So the educational community was explicitly Christian and biblical in its founding. Again, British models train up a moral people.
Mm.
And if you're going to train up a moral people, then you have to have a moral barometer. As C.S. Lewis said, you have to have a measuring rod outside of those things being measured, or you can do no measuring.
Mm.
And that measuring rod was the Bible, the Scriptures, and the Judeo-Christian ethic. Where are we today? I would argue that we can win if we recover the language that's been co-opted. That's why I called my book, "Why I'm a quote-unquote liberal and other conservative ideas." The word liberal historically meant liberate, liberty, freedom, justice. A liberal arts education, again, was to educate a free society and a free man. If we as Christians can be on our toes enough to proactively reclaim language that's been co-opted by the left, the progressive left, and use it to our advantage, I think we can win. For example, tolerance. All I have to do to win the debate on tolerance is ask somebody who disagrees with me and wants me to not have a voice because I'm a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
All I have to do is say, "Can you tolerate my intolerance?"
Yeah,
and they,
and they kind of shoot themselves in the foot there.
And the argument's over.
Yeah.
So if they truly believe in radical tolerance, open exchange, robust debate, then surely you'd like me to have my view too, wouldn't you? Kind of like Christ did. He asked rhetorical questions because he reclaimed the language that had been co-opted and twisted, and then he asked the rhetorical question, "Which one of you would like to cast the first stone?" And then he was quiet and he listened. That's the way the Christian community can win.
Yeah, that's great. Did you? Did either of you get to hear the Benjamin Carson speech that was given at the National Day of Prayer?
Read it, but didn't hear it.
It was the part he talks about political correctness, and the problem is that it muffles speech. It doesn't allow people to actually be able to voice their opinions, and it is so intolerant of other viewpoints. I thought he made a fantastic point there, and like you said, I just wanted to thank you very much, Dr. Piper and Dr. Jeremiah, for being on the show tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, you're welcome. And both of you just have a fantastic night, and I'll look you up again in the future. When we come back, two 12th grade students who used to attend public high schools, they are going to talk about the differences they experience between attending a public high school and the new Christian high school that they go to now. So stay with us. I'm Kevin Conover, filling in for Bob Siegel on The Bob Siegel Show.
Your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover, filling in for Bob. My website is educateforlife.org. That's educateforlife.org. Tonight we're talking about school choice. We've gotten to speak with Lindsay Burke of the Heritage Foundation about exactly what school choice is. We got to talk with Dr. Piper and also Dr. Jeremiah about where we've come from in this country on education and where things are going, why we're in the mess we are in today with the low graduation rates, only about 70% of students graduating nationally. And now I wanted to talk to a student I had in the past last year, and she's currently a 12th grade student at Christian High School in El Cajon. And her name is Melanie Stark. Melanie, are you there?
Ms. Conover?
Hi, Melanie. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks a lot for being on the show tonight. We talked about what we're going to talk about tonight, and I really want the audience to, you know, kind of hear a personal testimony of what it's like to go from attending a public school to attending a Christian school, so that they can hear, you know, from somebody who's actually seen that change, what the differences are like. So just to start off here, when did you switch from a public high school to a Christian high school?
Well, I switched from 8th to 9th grade, and then I switched to Granite, and then to another public school, and then I switched to a public charter school, and then I switched back to Christian.
Okay, gotcha.
Grade, yeah.
Okay, and then why did you make the switch to Christian High? What was going on in your mind and in your parents' minds that made you switch to Christian High?
What made me switch to Christian High was kind of like my parents were kind of pushing it on me, and I didn't really want to go. But after I got like comfortable with the people around me and saw like what great people these people actually are, and like how much they actually do love Jesus, like it's crazy like what the changes do to you.
Now, was there a real big difference between your peers at your public high school where you were and then your peers at Christian High School? Was there a big contrast? What would you say are some of the biggest differences that you saw?
The biggest differences is that I'd say 95% of my friends are into, partying, drinking every Friday, Saturday, you know, all the time. Like a lot of them are doing drugs. They're like in really, really bad situations. And it's the contrast is so big. It's incredible.
Okay, so you're saying the friends you had in the public school, when you look at their lives currently, a lot of them are still into partying and drinking and these sorts of things. Okay. Now, what about the learning environment? Was it easier or more difficult to learn at your public high school as far as the environment is concerned? Was there a difference at all for you?
I'd say that it's not as difficult. Like coming from a public school to a private school, the only thing that's different is that the teachers actually push you at a private school as opposed to at a public school. They teach easier curriculum, but the teachers don't push you. So you don't, either way, like your school's hard no matter what. It's just we're actually getting pushed to get an education at a private school as opposed to at a public school. They don't really care as
long. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I suppose, you know, just thinking about this, part of the reason that might be is at a public school, you're guaranteed the students regardless of, well, not completely regardless of the performance, but the kids are going to the public school and not paying any money versus the kids are coming to a private school and they are having to pay a tuition. And so the teachers know that they have to really push hard to justify that tuition that's being paid.
Right.
Now, is there a difference? You know, what kind of pressures did you face at the public school that you don't face at the Christian school?
The number one pressure, it's not really a pressure, but it's the fact that a lot of the kids, they don't care about school at all. And so them not caring about school and talking to you, you're going to get lost in the conversation with them and you're not going to pay attention to the teacher. And then, you know, your grades start to fail. And on top of that, there's kids doing drugs in every single class. So on top of that, you know, not only are they talking to you, but they're also pushing you to do other things that you don't want to do.
Oh, well, now, wait a second. Let's back up there. So in the school you attended, Melanie, you're saying that in class kids are doing drugs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Wow, that seems pretty. That's pretty amazing. Was that something that happened like, you know, once a month, once a week? What was this?
Depending on the person, really, and depending on the class, it depended on who I sat next to. There was a couple classes where I sat next to a kid who did it every day. There was a couple classes who were, you know, the kids were like, oh, yeah, let's do it, you know.
Well, wait, how could somebody be doing drugs in class and a teacher not notice that?
Because there's 40-plus kids in a class, and the teacher, you know, if the person's sitting in the back with their headphones on doing it, they're not going to notice.
Now, have you ever had kids doing drugs in class at the Christian school?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to when your classes are, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
15, 20.
Yeah. Now, if you had stayed at your public high school, do you think you would be a different person than you are today?
I would be a completely, like, even last year compared to how I was, because last year I still kind of hung out with them.
Yeah.
Compared to how I am now, like, I'm a completely different person than that. And it's because I was surrounding myself with that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I'm a completely different person now.
Wow, that's encouraging. I want to, Philip George, are you on the line, Philip? Philip, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, Philip, thanks for coming online. Melanie, stay on the line too here. But Philip, you're also in the 12th grade playing football. I had you as a student last year. I kind of want to ask you the same questions that I asked Melanie. When did you switch from a public high school to a Christian high school?
Entering my sophomore year, I switched to Christian high school.
Okay. And why did you make the switch? What was the reason? What was going through your parents' minds?
I honestly don't know. It was just opportunity I was given, and my parents didn't want me going to Morris High School anymore because they just thought I was surrounded with bad influence. So whatever I had for me going to a different school was the opportunity I was going to take in.
Now, was that something you didn't want to do or you did want to do at the time?
I honestly didn't even know about Christian High School. I never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like a big shock to me. So I wasn't really, I had mixed feelings about it because
sure.
I wanted to do something new, but I didn't know what I was getting myself into going to a private school, not only a private school, but it's a Christian school. So.
Okay. Now.
That was just a big turning point.
Uh-huh. And now the same question I asked Melanie, was there a big difference between your peers at the public high school you went to and then at Christian high school? What would you say are some of the biggest differences?
Oh, yeah, there's a huge difference. Obviously, there's drugs everywhere. Students.
When you say there's drugs everywhere, what do you mean by that? I mean, just lying on the ground or you know, in the bathrooms or what do you mean by that?
They were an easy access. All you had to do was say, you got to find the right person at first. And then all you had to do was say, oh, I want some drugs, and you can get them within 5 minutes.
Right there on the campus? Right there on the school campus?
Right there on the campus. There's drugs. People selling cocaine, weed, pills, whatever you wanted. It was on campus, and all you had to do was say, I wanted it, and you got to find the right person, and you can get it.
Wow, that is just absolutely unbelievable. Well, we still have another a whole section here to talk about. I want to keep talking with Philip and Melanie. Philip and Melanie, can you guys stay on the line for the next part of the show here?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, this is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. We're having a fantastic show here on school choice, the future of education, and right now talking to two 12th grade seniors who switched from public school to a private Christian school, and they're just talking about the differences that they've seen and they've experienced. So please stay with us. We'll be finishing up the show in the next round here.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. My website is educateforlife.org, where we offer online Christian apologetics classes defending the Christian worldview and giving you answers to the hard questions. If you'd like to join us tonight, the number is 888-344-1170. Philip, I wanted to keep asking you a question here. Was it easier or more difficult for you to learn at your public high school, and why? Philip, okay, it looks like we might have lost Philip here. So he's calling right back in here. So, Philip, are you there? You know, the kind of stuff that Philip and Melanie both had to deal with at public school, I just feel like is so sad. And to hear the change that has been made in both of their lives is amazing. And so with school choice, the whole emphasis here is that with school choice, it gives kids more options to get out of those schools where there is drugs on their campus, where they're having a struggle learning because they're having to deal with their peers in their class who are bringing them down. So school choice is actually a benefit to the public schools because it challenges them that if they don't improve, if they don't change, they're actually going to lose students who are going to go and have the option to go to a private school, a charter school, to homeschool, or whatever they need to do. And so I hope that school choice continues to expand here in California and around the nation. Philip, are you on? Philip, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Was it easier or more difficult for you to learn at your public high school?
It was definitely a lot harder because there's obviously a lot more kids, so there's more students in the classroom. But I think one of the main differences is the teachers. They care a lot more about your education and helping you go to the next level within college or focusing on your career. They offer, like, if you're not really getting it, they'd offer themselves after class or after school to where public schools,
mm-hmm.
they'd probably do that maybe once every couple weeks because they just worry about themselves and pretty busy, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, with what you saw happening at school, do you feel like you would be a different person if you had stayed at public school versus, you know, having switched over to the Christian school?
I'd be a completely different person. I know that for a fact because the people I hung around with there were pretty bad influences. So I was just surrounding myself with a bad group. And
yeah, and you were telling me you actually lost one of your best friends.
Yeah, I lost one of my best friends to a gang-related shooting. And that's the kind of group I hung around with. So if I would have stayed there, I honestly don't know where I'd be right now, even if I'd still be here. But I know I'd be into some trouble. So
yeah. Now, for both of you, Melanie and Philip, if someone you knew was considering going to a Christian high school, but they weren't sure whether they should do it or not, and they had that opportunity, Melanie, what would you say to them?
Well, I actually had someone who I actually got to come to Curse, our private school. I kind of approach it more of an academic standpoint because at public school, they're kind of taught, they're not really taught, but it's like put in the back of their brain to not really care about religious stuff because it's, you know, they're not allowed to teach it. So I kind of come at it more of an academic standpoint and say, you know, our teachers are so much better, the people are so much nicer, like, you know, it's a lot more fun, like a bunch of different stuff. I kind of like come about it that way as opposed to,
cause they don't see the benefit in, you know, going to chapels or having a Bible class or something like that yet.
Yeah, exactly. And then once they come, they're like, why didn't you tell me about this part? And I'm like, well, you know, because
you wouldn't have appreciated it is basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Philip, what about you? What would you say to somebody who was considering it? Maybe an old friend.
I just tell them about my experience. Because when I came to Christian, I didn't really want to come. Like, when I got there, I was just like, I don't know what this is. Everyone's happy. And
that's funny.
Like, I don't want to be here surrounded with these people. And then it dawned on me. And then, like, when I'd go home or, like, thought about going to a different school because I was thinking about moving a couple of times, and I realized that I had it really good at Christian. I had everything I needed. Help was there when I needed. the academic classes are really good. There's less people in the classroom, so teachers focus more on you.
Yeah.
And I just tell them more about, like, my experience, because I'm pretty sure, like, I'm 100% sure I don't want to leave now, like, even if, like, I was a junior and I'd experienced what I experienced there.
Yeah. Yeah, your life has been so changed.
Yeah, it's been dramatically changed, and I just, like, tell them, that's what I tell them the most.
Yeah. Well, Philip and Melanie, thank you so much for being on the show tonight, and I'll probably see you at school tomorrow. You guys have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. You know, for our audience out there, you know, the statistics are pretty blatant. California, over from 2002 to 2012, has seen a decrease in graduation rates. We're one of the few states that's actually seeing a decrease in graduation rates. And worldwide, the U.S., out of 14,000 public school districts in the U.S., only 6% have average student math achievement on a global level. California ranks 34 out of the 50 states, which is below average in education. A 2009 study showed that American students ranked 25th among 34 countries, behind nations like China, Singapore, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Finland. You know, something's got to change. And I really think that the school choice movement is where things need to go. C.S. Lewis said, "Education without values, as useful as it is, seems rather to make man a more clever devil." We don't just need smart people. We need smart people with the right values. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "The most dangerous criminal may be the man gifted with reason, but with no morals." He also said, "Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education." We need people to get smart, to learn, to study, not so they can better take advantage of their fellow man, but so that they can actually better lift up their fellow man. And without a solid moral foundation, that's going to be very, very difficult to do. But there are a lot of positive changes happening, a lot of really good things happening all over this country. The first charter school opened in 1992. By 2002, charter enrollment had grown to 500,000 students. Currently today, an estimated 610,000 students are currently on waiting lists for charter schools in 41 states in the District of Columbia. You know, people know a good thing when they see it. And it's pretty amazing what's happening. More than 245,000 children are in publicly funded private school choice programs as of 2012. Okay, that's according to the Alliance for School Choice. Private school choice programs saw an increase of more than 35,000 students from 2011 to 2012. The state with the most students benefiting from private school choice is Florida. They have 76,000 students in two private school choice programs. What does that mean? That means they're getting a credit, okay, from the government that's given to the parents. It's kind of like a school food stamp, or a voucher more is more appropriate. And then they take that money and they go to the school of their choice. Whatever school is doing the best job of raising kids up and helping them learn, giving them a good environment, the parent gets to choose that school. And that, if that's a public school, then it's a public school. If it's a private school, then it's a private school. But they're giving more choice, more opportunity to these parents, rather than the government monopolizing education and saying, you got to do it this way or no way. This is all you've got. Our country is all about freedom, freedom to choose, freedom of speech, freedom of expression. And yet when it comes to education, for so long now, there has been no choice at all. There has been no options for parents, no options for students. And I look at Philip and I look at Melanie and I look at how their lives are so different because of making that switch from schools where literally they're dealing with drugs on a regular basis, having to deal with that pressure to conform to that standard from their peers, and how they are a completely different person because of going to this private Christian school. Why can't more kids have that chance? Why can't more kids have that opportunity? Do we really care so little about kids that we are willing to keep them because of teacher unions in the public schools when they're that dangerous, when they're that out of control? That just seems ludicrous to me. It seems incredibly unfair. It seems incredibly unloving. But there's a lot of good things happening all over this country. A lot of people are getting involved and making a difference. And I encourage our audience, everybody out there, if that's you, if this is something you care about, get involved, make a difference. Start a petition, whatever it takes to let our government officials in Sacramento and the rest of the state and to let the teacher unions know, hey, listen, we want to give these kids a fair shot. We want to give them the opportunity that they deserve to learn and to grow in a safe, loving, moral environment. Okay. So thank you so much for being here on the show, for tuning in. This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. Bob will be back next week. And I hope you have a fantastic night and stay blessed. Okay, take care.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.